This podcast is intended for investment professionals only.
What does Freddie Mercury have in common with defined contribution pensions? How can team leaders make their employees feel comfortable being themselves at work? And how does being part of a church choir growing up prepare you for life as the head of sales at a global asset manager? The life and career of our guest on today's In Conversation With podcast might give us a clue. I'm Eliza Grimmond, Senior Content Manager at LGIM, and with me on the podcast today to discuss singing, saving, and social inclusion is Rita Butler-Jones, Co-Head of DC. Having worked in almost every role within the industry that you can imagine, Rita's CV includes support roles, relationship management, consultancy, head of sales, and head of DC at Threadneedle and now at LGIM. Rita was 2021's winner of Professional Pensions Pensions Woman of the Year Award, so LGIM Talks feels very lucky to get a spot in her crowded calendar. Hi Rita, it's absolutely lovely to have you on the podcast today. To start with, let's just kick off with a few points about what got you here. So what did you enjoy doing growing up?
Hi Eliza, thank you. So growing up when I was at school, I loved playing hockey and netball. I was very competitive, shall we say, at school at sports. So it was something I thoroughly enjoyed both, but actually in junior and infant school, as well as in secondary school. I think netball was probably my favourite sport at the time. And then some of my other interests really while I was growing up was very much singing very much dominated any of my free time. I was a member of several choirs, school choirs, both at primary and secondary. And I also sang in a lovely church folk group, and I used to do weddings and events, etc. So I used to really enjoy doing that in the church environment. And of course, at school, we were very good at putting on big productions at school, and we were very fond of Gilbert and Sullivan operettas. So I was I took part in the Mikado. Iolanthe was the first one that I did, and I played a fairy.
And so you have a varied kind of characterization there.
Absolutely, absolutely. I was Pirates of Penzance and HMS Pinafore, and of course a lot of other great things that we did as part of the school choir. We sang in the town hall several times, took part in competitions, school choir competitions. So it dominated a lot of my free time. And certainly started in primary school. I was also a member of the school chess team and took part in lots of the Birmingham competitions at the time. I was very lucky to a neighbour of ours actually taught me to play chess when I was very young, actually. I suppose I was probably only 5 or 6 when I first sat in front of a chess board. Something I thoroughly enjoyed as well throughout my school life.
So would you call yourself the Grand Master of Birmingham in that case?
Oh, absolutely not, Eliza. I can't claim any fame in terms of that. And I unfortunately haven't played since the years and years. I taught my son to play when he was growing up, but it's been many years now since I played a game of chess.
So I think there are very few interests that you didn't have growing up from what it sounds like. So I suppose what I'm interested in is what made you choose pensions from this very varied set of hobbies that you had. I know that the pensions industry certainly wasn't your first port of call. So could you tell me a little bit about your first job?
I certainly didn't grow up dreaming of working in pensions. I'll be really honest about that. I had a real dream to be a famous singer, and I thought that one day I'd meet my heroes, Donny Osmond and David Cassidy, and of course Freddie Mercury from Queen fame, who I did get to see when I was 16. So growing up, I did get a place at university when I got to 18, but it was a bit difficult at the time, and it was quite expensive. And it wasn't something that I could afford to do at the time. So unfortunately, I didn't take that up. But I started working in various industries, mostly the service industry. I was working while I was still at school in sixth form. I was working in as a waitress. I worked in a supermarket, and I worked in a factory at one stage as well, doing quality control. When I turned 18, I had a bar job. And I think one of my very first full-time jobs when I actually left school was working in a supermarket. And I worked in what we called the cash office at the time. So that was back in the day, Eliza, that I doubt you even remember. Was back in the day when we used to actually pay wages on a weekly basis, and they used to be paid in cash, and they all went in a brown envelope with a handwritten pay slip. So that was some time ago when I did that. So that was one of my very first full-time roles.
Sounds like you had quite a lot of customer-facing jobs. I mean, do you think that set you up well for your future life in sales?
Absolutely, because I was always exposed externally. Even when I worked in the supermarket, whilst I was in the office, I always, a couple of days a week, when all the work was done in the office, I was out on the shop floor as well and on checkouts and sitting on the customer service desk. So that was really important. You learn a lot as well, being a waitress, being a bar person. You always learn a lot because you learn customer service. You learn, you hear lots of different stories when you work in those environments as well. So, and you learn how to converse with so many different diverse people that it really sets you up well, I think, for the roles that I subsequently took.
Absolutely. So what led you to segue into finance and pensions from those customer facing roles that you initially had?
I always like to say that pensions probably found me in some ways. I kind of landed here by accident, I think is probably how I'd describe it. So I began very, very much in a support role. So I began in as a PA working for an appointed representative of Irish Life. And during that role, I became a mortgage underwriter as well. I did first stage mortgage underwriting. And then I managed to sort of work my way up to multiple managerial roles, really managing support team and managing consultants and the sales teams. And then over a period of time, I became a consultant myself, went into consultancy for some time. But just before I did that, actually, one thing that was quite interesting so that I could, it was kind of, it squared the circle for me in terms of pensions. I was also seconded for 12 months to a company and was actually a pension manager for 12 months. So whilst I worked at Threadneedle, they seconded me to one of their clients. So that was really interesting view of pensions from a company perspective, in-house a company perspective. And then I then became head of DC at Threadneedle, first of all, and then moved into the consultancy term Mercer. And I did that for nearly 3 years and then landed at Legal & General as head of DC sales.
When you started working for DC, it was very much sort of an industry in its infancy. And how have you seen that evolve? And what was it that really attracted you to DC pensions in particular in the first place?
So it was a very different industry when I first joined back in probably 92, 93. So it's some time ago now. And, you know, the finance and pension industry was a very, very, very male dominated environment back then. So when I first joined Prudential and I worked in the retail side of their business, but on the other side of the office was the corporate pensions. And I was always very interested in what they were doing. They were looking after group pensions. It all seemed very exciting and interesting from my perspective. I think, Eliza, it was something that my dad said to me at one stage when I was talking to him about, there's a job going on the other side of the office, Dad, in pensions, and I think I might do it. And he said something along the lines of, you should, because people should know more about pensions. I was never... I'm going to describe it. I don't think he actually used this word, but I think what he was saying to me is no one really emotionally disturbed him about how important a pension would be to him in his later life. So I think that's what really got me so interested. And then in turn, why I became so passionate about DC pensions. And I've only ever worked in DC. I've never worked in any other part of pensions. It's always been DC.
That's really powerful phrase, emotionally disturbed, to describe pensions. I've never heard that before, but I think it's a really interesting phrase. And it's great to hear you talk about the social utility of what you do and also what you're able to do for people in terms of creating better retirement outcomes. I'm hearing a really strong emphasis from you on how your life experience has shaped your behaviours and your choices at work. Do you think it's really important that the makeup of the industry reflects the people whose pensions it takes care of? You've mentioned your dad just now, but obviously in a wider sense as well.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, I grew up as one of 10 siblings and very much came from a working class background. I saw how well my parents had to manage their money and their budget so tightly. And they did it, and they did it extremely, extremely well. And we were fortunate that we, you know, we got treats and we got holidays every year. But, you know, as I then progressed in my career, you know, I've always found it really important that we recognise that there are people from a working class background, by way of example, from other kind of diverse backgrounds, where pension isn't something they talk about every day, something they think about, that they're often thinking about getting from one end of the week or one end of the month to the other. So it's really important that, you know, that people who recognize that and understand that can converse with them about the importance of pensions as well.
That's really interesting to hear, Rita. How do you bring that D&I emphasis into your role today in a more formal way?
Well, I am a huge advocate of improving diversity and inclusion across the finance and pension industries. It's so important for me to see people who have faced the same challenges as I have and other people have across the table at work, but also representing you and your pensions. I think that's really important that people, you know, the people that you're conversing with understand that their position and where they're coming from. So, you know, if a member of my team comes to me with a family care issue, for example, I am absolutely 100% behind them in supporting them, because trust me, over the years, I come from a very big family. I've been there. We've had family care issues. So it's so, so important that, you know, that we continue to do that. And I think as well, you know, throughout all of my career, I've been most proud about contributing to the development and growth of future talent within the pensions industry. And that's, you know, both male and female, and also across the LGBTQ plus and the Black, Asian, minority ethnic community.
Rita, how do you bring that D&I emphasis into your role today in a more formal way?
I mean, I feel really strongly about bringing talented women into positions of leadership and believe it's a key part of how we can help change this industry for the better. So my current leadership team, as you know, Eliza, is 60% women. And in the wider team across DC, it's over 50%. And as I've moved up in my role over the years, I've always been a mentor to my colleagues. And I'm so, so proud to see some of my previous mentees now heading up their own teams across the industry. It gives you a really proud moment when you see that happening in practice. But it's so, so satisfying to see that. It makes you so proud to see these people now leading their own teams. And of course, it is busy and hectic now in my current role as co-head of DC at Legal & General. But I always ensure that I make time to see and meet with my current mentees. And I have three of them at the moment, Eliza.
Wow. So you managed to clear time in your extremely busy schedule for them. And I can testify it's a very, very hectic schedule from from the LGIM talks planning that we've done. So that's really impressive. Just sticking on the topic of your new role, Rita, you recently took over as a co-head of DC along with Stuart Murphy. What are your plans and what's your vision for the role?
No big changes as such, Eliza, other than reacting to what happens in the market, and it's an ever-changing landscape in DC. So we've now got our senior leadership team in place, and we're really looking outwardly around things such as pension consolidation. Obviously, that's very high on our agenda. This has been driven by the TPR, by the government, and that's one we've got an eye on to stay close to that and to make sure that we are in a position to deal with that as and when the TPR come back to us with a response on that. So we're also very focused on the post-retirement space as well. You'll know from last year, we've done a lot of work around personalized guidance. We're enhancing all of the offerings that we have for members at retirement and trying to support them with the complex decisions that they make at retirement. We did a lot of research last year around taking tax-free cash early by way of example, and we saw a lot of value destruction. And as an industry, you know, we want to be able to continue to encourage people to keep their investments in place and not just to cash in at any given time, because it may be the wrong decision. We at least want to be able to guide people in those decisions. And let's face it, you know, we've seen this year volatility in the market again. You know, we don't want people crystallizing the losses that we saw sort of in 2020 when the markets were so volatile.
Absolutely. As we saw in March 2020.
That's right. Yeah. So we're very focused on that. And we did some internal research as well last year, Eliza, as you will know, on the pension gap for women. And that's something that we're going to continue to work on throughout 2022. And we're well down the line now in thinking about, so how can, having identified these issues, how do we help solve them? How do we become part of the solution? And so we're engaging with other providers, we're engaging with industry bodies, we're engaging with some of our clients as well, to really talk through how we, as a, collectively, how we can actually help plug some of these gaps.
I just want to pick up on some of those themes that you've mentioned there, Rita. Since auto-enrolment, we've obviously seen some really big shifts in the DC industry. We've seen the post-retirement space open up, as you've mentioned, but we've also seen a stronger regulatory emphasis on ESG and the responsibility of trustees to report on their decision-making. What's been the biggest trend of the last few years for you?
Thanks, Eliza. So for me, the biggest trend for the last few years really is the post-retirement market. Well, undoubtedly, it's a huge theme. It's something that we're all really focused on. And obviously, we've seen the FCA's investment pathways legislation now bed down. You know, we see this very much as a very good first step, but there's so much more that we need to do at retirement and in retirement. You know, and again, we talked a great deal in 2021 around personalized guidance. We're running pilots on that now at Legal & General to see if we can give that very personalized guidance to each individual when they're making those really important decisions of what they do with their money. You know, as we said, there is a real value destruction, and people can lose as much as 10 years worth of savings by making the wrong decision. So I still think there's much more, and I still think we need more products in that space as well. We need to be able to have choices, more choices available for our members when they get to that stage. So lots of work going on there, and it's an incredibly important aspect of our market. So, and of course, Eliza, it's really important that we continue to innovate, especially as we do business in such a competitive market. So obviously, huge focus on ESG, and we are market leading in our ESG capabilities. And there is now a definite shift towards illiquid assets in DC, very much being driven by the government again. And we see this as very important for medium to longer term enhancements to member benefits and outcomes at retirement.
Well, thanks, Rita. It's been a really insightful conversation, and great to hear a little bit more about your plans for the role. Just one last question from me, and it's an important one. What have you been reading or watching recently? Have you got any recommendations for me?
So, Eliza, now you're asking. I do read a great deal. I read every single day, mostly fiction, but I do like a good autobiography. The latest autobiography I've read is Philip Schofield's, and I'd recommend that. It was a really pleasant read, very enjoyable. I mostly read a lot of detective books, if I was honest, Eliza. I think I must have wanted somewhere subconsciously wanted to be in a police officer and maybe in forensics, but I thoroughly enjoy all of that. And
do you like an Agatha Christie?
Yes, I do like an Agatha Christie. I really enjoy her work. I haven't, I've read most of her work, but I also like people like Harlan Coben. And actually, he's just televised one of his books, which was called, it's on Netflix, and I watched that over Christmas while I was recovering from COVID, and it's called Stay Close. So that's excellent. If you've got time, do watch that. And you also can't beat a period drama for me. I absolutely love those and get lost in all of that sort of drama on TV.
Thanks, Rita. You've given me plenty to get stuck into there to see out the rest of January. And thanks to all of our listeners. Otherwise, don't forget to subscribe to LGIM Talks, available on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you usually get your podcasts.
If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating, or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous, on the Apple Podcast app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookout for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording, and do not reflect the views of Legal and General Investment Management. Forward-looking statements are, by their nature, subject to significant risks and uncertainties, and are based on internal forecasts and assumptions, and should not be relied upon. Where individual stocks are mentioned, these do not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any security, and are for illustrative purposes only. Legal and General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more great content, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website, lgim.com. Copyright 2021, Legal and General Investment Management Limited. All rights reserved. No part of this publication may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, including photocopying and recording, without the written permission of the publishers. This material is issued by Legal and General Investment Management Asia Limited, a licensed corporation, BBB 488, regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission, for professional investors only.